It's the Monday, March 14th edition of Crunch Time here on your hometown radio station, Eagle Country 99.3, and presented by OrthoSensi, Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, the orthopedic authority for work, sports, and everyday injuries. Go online to schedule your next appointment or learn more at OrthoSensi.com. That's OrthoSensi.com. I am your host, Double T, Travis there. Appreciate you tuning in to the show each and every Monday. Lots to unpack on this edition of Crunch Time as we're going to talk about the IHSAA Boys Basketball Regional with Lawrenceburg and Jacksonville competing at that level over the weekend. Got some high school football news to pass along, which actually deals with a couple of the Lawrenceburg Tigers that were playing on the boys basketball team over the weekend. We'll get to that. And once we get through the high school sports aspect of our show tonight, as we're moving into the springtime of year, we're going to start sprinkling in some other things there. A lot happening in the world of college and pro sports. We'll save some of that talk for the back end of the show and just spend a couple minutes on each of those topics. Certainly a lot to talk about with the Cincinnati Reds. A big trade yesterday, or over the weekend, I should say, with Sonny Gray leaving town. The Bengals have made a splash in free agency. They've also lost a big-name player, in my opinion. FC Cincinnati getting on the win sheet over the weekend for the first time this year. And, of course, there's a big college basketball tournament that is coming up here pretty soon as well. So I do want to talk a little bit about that kind of stuff because, well, it's fun to me and it is relevant to our area as well. So hopefully you'll stick around for that chat at the end of the show. But I do want to start with the Lawrenceburg Tigers at the Boys Basketball Regional, the first time they were playing in the regional since 2009. They actually won the first game in 2009, lost in overtime to Winchester, but that was a 21 win season for the Tigers, and they have done that again this year, minus getting to the regional championship game, falling to Evansville Bossy 73-62 in game one on Saturday morning. But a 21 season for the Tigers and the first sectional championship since 2009, so the first time they've done either of those things since 2009, winning 20 games and cutting them down at the sectional. So a lot to be proud of for this Tigers team, and I told all four of the seniors after the game as much that no reason to hang your head. Played a great game on Saturday and had a great season winning those 20 games and the sectional championship. So let's get into this game a little bit and break it down. Ended up being an 11-point win for Evansville Bossy, but I even said it on the broadcast on Saturday alongside Bill Smith. I thought it was an incredible effort from the Tigers. They really came out of the gate strong early in this game, which hadn't been the case in their previous three tournament games. Had to come from behind in the semifinals of the sectional and the championship game, but they come out of firing, got out to a quick 6-point lead. Making some threes, Ashton Craig was good down low. They were playing under control, looked really, really confident. Garrett Yoon, Logan Ahaus providing some of the long-distance shooting. And then you fast-forward to right before halftime. Tigers, I think, could have had a little bit bigger lead going into half. I certainly thought that they were better than 1 point better than Evansville Bossy in those first two quarters. But Garrett Yoon gets a offensive rebound and put back at the buzzer, which sends the Lawrenceburg Tigers into the locker room with a 1 point lead. And at the time, they still should have been feeling very, very confident. I don't know what the halftime speech was like, but I'm sure they came out feeling like they had a really good chance of winning the game. But the shot making simply wasn't there in the second half. There was some big offensive rebounds down the stretch for Bossy that Coach Cutter thought was a backbreaker or backbreaking plays. We'll hear from him in just a second. Bossy made some adjustments going into the second half. They guarded the post a little differently. Ashton Craig only had 3 points in the second half after having 8 points almost on four straight possessions in the first half. I thought Bobo had a tough time getting going. I thought he got fouled a couple times going towards the basket. They didn't call it. I will say this, the refs were pretty consistent in the way they called the game. They let him play, so I'm not making any complaints there. But if you watch Jackson and his game, a big part of his game is getting to the free throw line. He's very, very good there. So I don't know if he ever really gotten a good flow offensively. Did have a breakaway jam in the first half that I thought was going to kind of propel the Tigers into this big momentum swing, similar to the sectional championship game. But anyways, outside of Jackson, you look at the outside shooting for the Tigers, Ahouse and Yoon, they ended up making seven threes, but 7 of 26 from behind the arc, 26%. I mentioned they didn't get to the free throw line a lot. They went 5 of 6 there. Only 10 turnovers, so all that was pretty good. 37 rebounds for the Tigers, and that was against a really good rebounding team in Bossy that averages about 35 a game. They also had 16 assists in that game, which was well above their season average. So all in all, Lawrenceburg played a great game. They forced Evansville Bossy to rush on their three-point shots and forced them into contested shots and really held them down. They shot in the 20% area, 21%, 22% from behind the arc. And usually when Bossy shoots that poorly from outside, they don't often win those games. At least that hasn't been the trend this year. Not that they lost a ton, because they are a really good shooting team. But again, the Tigers had a good game plan. They were able to do a lot of great things in this game, but ultimately fall by 11 points. I will say Evansville Bossy's best player, Jameer Ajibade, he was as advertised, 19 points. He could do a little bit of everything out there, but it was Drayden Nunn that was kind of the star of the game for Bossy, 21 points and went 9 of 10 down the stretch from the free throw line. He did have the one miss, and that was at a time where I think the Tigers only trailed by 4 or 5 points. It was somewhere in that ballpark, as I'm just trying to recollect this off the top of my head, but they couldn't track down a long rebound. Bossy ends up going back to the free throw line, extending their lead. That was one of those deflating moments in the fourth quarter, and we do want to provide you some audio from Coach Cutter, who came up and chatted with us after the game.
I thought we did a great job. We made them take some rush shots, some tough shots, but you know, when they made the run there at the end, it was came down to more of a composure standpoint and then offensive rebounds. They got a few boards, second chance points that I thought broke our back there when we were trying to stick with it. You know, it's one of those things. You just got to play 32 minutes, and I think our kids play for about 31 and a half.
To build off of what Coach Cutter just said there about his team playing 31 and a half minutes, I know he said that in kind of a jokingly tone, as the kids really did play their tail off for the entire game. But you look at the 11 points that they lost by, the game was much closer than that. That's not indicative of how the Tigers played. And in my mind, should at least been an 8-point victory for Evansville Bossy. They were awarded a 3 earlier in the game, which was it was a long 2. I don't know how they missed that one. They never really checked on it. Nobody at the scores table seemed to make snuff about it, so they let it go, and it didn't end up mattering in the overall grand scheme of things. And you also had an instance at the end of the game where the Tigers have called off the dogs. They weren't going to foul anymore, and one of the young men from Evansville Bossy dribbled all the way down the floor and laid it in as time expired. And I don't want to shed too much light on that. I personally thought it was disrespectful in the moment. I still think that that simply should have just been a dribble out the clock situation. Unwritten rule in basketball, I'll just leave it at that. But again, that 11 points, not indicative of the way the Tigers played. This game was much, much closer than that, and a really, really tremendous effort once again from the Tigers. Let's go back to Coach Cutter, as we'll hear about how he addressed his team in the locker room and him talking about his senior class.
Yeah, and that's what I tried to tell our kids, you know, be proud of how you represented your school and your community this morning, because, you know, the hardest part about that game is the worst part of it was the last part for us. And it's hard as a 17, 18-year-old kid to look back and realize how well they played throughout the course of that game. I mean, that's one of the better games we've played all year. And the scoreboard doesn't reflect it, but, you know, they grew as a team. They grew as players. They grew as a program by being here. And can't say how proud of them I am. Just the biggest thing, I think, is just celebrating the senior class that we have. You know, we're not here without those guys. You know, Jackson's put a lot of time into basketball. Garrett and I have put a lot of time into multiple sports. And, you know, Ashton, I told him, I said, you know, you had the opportunity to go to Notre Dame early if you wanted. And I think, you know, he chose to come back and play with his friends and hang out with his buddies one more season. And, you know, I told him, I said, I hope you can just look back on that and you know, appreciate the fact that you had some fun with your teammates and classmates.
Absolutely. I know it's maybe tough to do it right now in the moment, but you won 20 games this year, won the sectional championship for the first time since 2009. It has been a remarkable season for your team. Can you kind of put it into words what it's been like this year, just what kind of ride it's been?
I mean, this week has been incredible for me personally. You know, like I said, I think last week what I've enjoyed the most about this group is I taught, you know, a couple of these guys in fourth grade, you know, back 10 years ago, and I've really just enjoyed watching them grow up as adults, you know, young adults, and, you know, just put all the time in that they have to the program, and that's all you can ask for. You can have just great kids that work hard, and I've really enjoyed that.
I want to take a little different viewpoint on the seniors just briefly. I've had an opportunity to call not only a good majority of their basketball games, but a lot of the football games for Ashton, Garrett, and Daya. Those four individuals in particular have carried themselves very, very well and represented Lawrenceburg High School in an amazing manner. Over these last 4 years, they've won a lot of games, both on the basketball floor and those three individuals playing football, helping the Tigers to three straight sectional championships. Finally broke through and won a sectional in basketball this year. Like I said, when the team hasn't won one, the school hasn't won one since 2009, that's pretty special to get to where they got this year. It's not necessarily been the standard at Lawrenceburg. I know Coach Cutter wants to make it the standard. It's not an easy sectional to win, the one they play in. So, again, those four need to be very, very proud of what they helped their team accomplish this year. And those returning players should be very, very proud of how they helped in all this success this year and should look to build upon that going into next season. Speaking of which, they do have a lot of kids returning that either dressed on the varsity team or played a significant role. Now, Logan Rohr is the one that has played the most significant role as he was a starter most of this season, a little bit of a do-it-all player, right around 10 points per game, gets his teammates involved, assisting the basketball. He can rebound as a guard. Active hands on defense can be a little bit of a disruptor, especially when they're doing some press, traps type stuff. Very good in transition and going to the basket. If he improves his outside jumper, he's going to be even more a dynamic player next year than he already is this year as a junior. You have Logan Ahouse, who will be coming back as a junior. He really stepped up here in this sophomore season of his. Really good outside shooter, but now the next step for Logan Ahouse is to be a more dynamic scorer all the way around and be able to score at all three levels. We'll see if he can do that with another full offseason to get himself ready for that junior season. Andrew Myers, a player that came off the bench as a junior this year, kind of has had to wait his turn behind Garrett Yoon, Daya Patel, and even Logan Rohr to an extent, as those guards didn't come off the floor a whole bunch unless they were in foul trouble. Andrew has shown the ability to score. He's got a nice shot, good vertical leap, can jump and get his shot over most defenders in the area. So I feel like he's got a chance to be a guy that's heavily relied on to score and do some other big things for him next year. Also going to be in that senior class next year is Sam Cornett and Brennan Bushman. Both start at the JV role this year as they've kind of had to wait their turn a little bit as well. Sam Cornett going to be one of the forwards on this team. Good rebounder. Hustles all the time. Pretty good mid-range shot as well, can score a little bit around the basket. Brennan Bushman, great three-point shooter from what I've seen, just hasn't got the opportunity to crack the varsity rotation, so I think he will likely get a chance to do that in some capacity next year. Ben Cornett will be a junior. I've seen some nice things out of him as a point guard on the JV team, takes care of the ball. Good passer and can shoot the ball a little bit from what I've seen as well. And then you got a couple of freshmen, Cooper Bobo, who played a lot of varsity in the first half of the season. I believe he went through a spell with some injuries and maybe not didn't get back to his right self in the second half. Very, very talented 6'4 guard, the younger brother of Jackson Bobo. So sky's the limit for him. And Noah Kaniga, he'll be entering his sophomore year looking to make some strides on the basketball floor, but certainly can do some things to help this team as well. So I'm counting eight guys that were dressing varsity this year and or played a significant role. So that's a good place to start if you're Coach Cutter. A lot of teams will not have a similar type core group coming back next season. So just one final thought on the Tigers. 20 wins, sectional championship, first time either of those two things have happened since 2009. So we just want to congratulate Coach Cutter and his team one more time on a phenomenal season. And I do want to talk about the Jacksonville Eagles and them winning the regional over the weekend. Before we get to that, real quick here, I do want to mention Garrett Yoon and Daya Patel one more time, because we found out today that that Tigers duo was selected to play for the South team at the 56th annual Murat Shrine North-South Football All-Star Classic. It will be held on Friday, July 15th at North Central High School. And those two young men will be joined by their offensive coordinator, Mike Manford from Lawrenceburg, obviously, who was selected to be a coach on the South team. And they have certainly had some success together over the past 4 years. The three sectional titles, the Tigers averaged 42 points per game last year, over 400 yards total offense. Yoon, Patel, big part of that, as they connected many times down the field with big plays. Dia Patel's had back-to-back 1,000-yard receiving seasons. He's going to go on to Ball State. Garrett Yoon, what can you say about him? Has been starting since a freshman at quarterback. He's been absolutely outstanding. He will go on to St. Francis to continue playing quarterback. So congratulations to those two guys and Mike Manford for heading out to the North-South All-Star Classic in July. That's going to be quite the experience for that trio. You're listening to Crunch Time, presented by OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, the orthopedic authority for work, sports, and everyday injuries. We're going to be joined by Dr. Ron Auer on the 28th this month, as he will be talking about all the good stuff going on at OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, and how they might be able to help you with one of those work, sports, or everyday-type injuries. In the meantime, you can go over to OrthoSensi.com to learn more about their services. So to stick with the basketball theme thus far on the show this evening, congratulations to the Jacksonville Eagles heading to the semi-state regional champs for the first time since 2009. They are 22-5 overall after they knocked off Bloomfield 63-54 in the first round of the regional at Martinsville. And then it was a dominant performance against Indianapolis Lutheran 71-54 in that regional title game. And what a performance it was from Wyatt Day in that regional championship game. 30 points and went 13-16 from the free throw line to lead the Eagles. His buddy and dynamic duo, Caleb Simon, 14 points. Justin Swinney with 10 to round out the double-digit scorers for the Eagles in that regional championship game. So they are down to the final four, and Jacksonville, the number 10 team in Class 1A, will take on North Davies at the Seymour Semi-State on Saturday. North Davies is 25-3 and ranked number 2 in Class 1A. On the other side of the bracket, you have number 1 Gary 21st Century, and they will be taking on number 11 Lafayette Central Catholics. So four of the top 11 teams in Class 1A remain in that semi-state. When you look at this North Davies team that Jacksonville is going to go up against, 25-3 on the season, and they have won 8 games in a row, and their defense has been absolutely unbelievable in that stretch. They got a couple of games where they have held teams under 30 points. Bar Reeve, they held to 29 in the sectional championship game. That's one of the best teams in 1A. They've won many state championships in recent memory. They beat Washington Catholic 71-19 in the sectional first round. A couple other games where they only gave up 37 to Shoals, 37 to Edinburgh in the regional first round. Edinburgh very good this year, and then only give up 32 to Borden in the regional championship game. So defensively, North Davies very, very good. They only give up 37 points per game. Conversely, Jacksonville averages 66 points per game, so something's going to have to give here. You talk about a winning streak for North Davies. Jacksonville has not lost since February 9. That is 12 straight wins for the Eagles, so two of the hottest teams in the state, particularly in 1A, will clash at the semi-state on Saturday at Seymour. That will be a 4 o'clock start for Jacksonville and North Davies. 21st Century and Central Catholic, they're going to play at 1 p.m. up in Lafayette. And, of course, the state championship game will take place next Saturday, March 26th, 10:30 a.m. at Gainbridge Fieldhouse in downtown Indianapolis, and potentially Jacksonville will be playing in that game. So good luck to the Eagles as they take on number 2 North Davies this Saturday, again 4 p.m. at Seymour. All right, got about 10 minutes left in the show. Want to hit on some Bengals, Reds, and FC Cincinnati news and talk briefly about the NCAA tournament as well. Free agency getting underway this week in the NFL, and the big point of emphasis for the Bengals is to address the offensive line and give Joe Burrow some further protection, or some better protection, and they have certainly done that right out of the chute, agreeing to terms with Alex Kappa, formerly of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Their starting right guard last year, four-year, $40 million deal would be the largest contract the Bengals have ever given to a guard. Kappa was a third-round pick back in 2018, and last year, if you pay attention to Pro Football Focus, they put out grades on players. It's a good way to find out if somebody is good without watching them play a whole bunch. So Kappa, 71.9 overall grade last year from PFF. That would be sixth among starting right guards. So if he's the sixth best starting right guard in the league, this is a great, great deal for the Cincinnati Bengals. They have also agreed in principle to sign offensive lineman Ted Karras, who has spent most of his career with the New England Patriots, just 28 years old, a three-year, $18 million deal, and Karras can play guard and or center, so some versatility up front and allows them to maybe be creative with the rest of their offseason plans. If Karras is going to play center, that allows the Bengals maybe an opportunity to go out and find another guard via trade, free agency, and or in the draft. If Karras is going to play guard, then maybe Trey Hopkins is back in the fold at center, or they can look elsewhere to fill that position as well. So I like the versatility with Karras. I can't tell you too much more about him other than the folks in New England always seem to like him. And the Twitter reaction I'm getting is that's a pretty good pickup for the Bengals as well. But they're at least building depth, and I think they got two starters on the offensive line coming in today. And there has been some rumors that they are maybe seeking a trade with Dallas to bring in Lael Collins. I don't know how strong those rumors are. Collins has been a very, very good player for Dallas. LSU product as well, so kind of like that around here in Bengals land. He has been dealing with injuries here in the recent memory, but still a very, very talented player. And the Bengals definitely need another starting level tackle to go alongside Jonah Williams, whether he's going to stay at left tackle or flip over to the right, depending on who the Bengals are able to bring in. But I love that they are addressing offensive line through free agency. I'm not going to say that they shouldn't draft offensive linemen. That's certainly got to be a part of your plan at some point. I just don't like the idea that you have to go get one in the first round every year because the other guys aren't performing. It's not easy for rookie offensive linemen to come in and be star players right off the get-go and kind of be the guy that glues everything together. So this gives the Bengals a little bit more flexibility with their first-round pick, whether they want to trade it for an established offensive lineman or maybe use it to go cornerback, because I think that's going to be a big need for this team moving forward as well. But I like how free agency has started. Despite the loss of Larry Ogunjobi, defensive tackle, who is going to sign with Chicago on a $40 million contract. But Bengals are bringing back B.J. Hill, who they traded for prior to this last season, getting rid of Billy Price, bringing in B.J. Hill. That was a great, great trade, and B.J. certainly earned a contract extension, so not all is lost on the defensive line for the Bengals. So while we can celebrate what the Cincinnati Bengals have done already in free agency, if you look just down the street in downtown Cincinnati, Cincinnati Reds not making the same type of moves. They have shown an unwillingness to spend a lot of money here in this recent window. And, they have shipped out another player over the weekend. That'd be starting pitcher Sonny Gray, who was traded to Minnesota for top pitching prospect Chase Petty. Petty was a first-round pick for the Twins just a year ago, so just 18 years old. I think his 19th birthday is coming up pretty soon. A right-hander, throws hard. Sure, he's got a great ceiling, but still probably a few years away from making an impact on the big team. But the Reds have already said goodbye to another starter in Wade Miley earlier this offseason as they let him go. They traded away starting catcher Tucker Barnhart, and also not going to be re-signing Nick Castellanos, who was a big part of this team just a season ago. So for all the great moves that the Cincinnati Bengals have seemingly made today with the two offensive linemen coming in that will presumably be starters, B.J. Hill, as I just mentioned, the Cincinnati Reds going the opposite direction. I was simply just going to talk about the Sonny Gray trade this afternoon, but that was until another trade surfaced just after 5 o'clock this afternoon. The Reds reportedly finalizing a deal that will send Jesse Winker and Eugenio Suarez to the Seattle Mariners. And you might be asking the question, why would did you trade Jesse Winker? And apparently he is being put in the deal as a way to offload the big contract of Suarez. So the Reds don't want to pay Suarez. He hasn't performed to an all-star level in the past couple of years like Jesse Winker has. So that's apparently the price that the Reds have to pay to unload Suarez, is to attach all-star outfielder Jesse Winker, who went on an absolute tear last year before he got hurt. So your best two outfielders, Jesse Winker, Nick Castellanos, sayonara, they're gone. Winker's going to be playing for the Mariners. We don't know where Castellanos is going to be playing. Won't be in Cincinnati. We know that for a fact, as they're not going to be ponying up any money to bring anybody substantial onto the roster. The general manager, the owner, the whole front office have talked at length about how they are going to be going into some cost-cutting measures over the offseason. I don't want to dive too deep into the Reds and maybe the issues that they have in the front office or just the direction of the team. I don't have enough time to do that in this particular show, but from a fan standpoint, seeing these guys get traded, Jesse Winker, fan favorite, also an all-star player last year. He had a phenomenal season. I know Suarez hasn't necessarily played up to his contract over the last couple years, but he's just a few years removed from being an all-star and hitting, what, 50 home runs or whatever. They didn't want to pony up money to bring back Nick Castellanos, who was their best player last year, at least their best hitter. They traded Tucker Barnhart. I don't necessarily have a problem with that, with Tyler Stevenson being the everyday starter now at catcher because he's potentially a budding star. And you get rid of Sonny Gray out of your rotation. They let Wade Miley go. There's just a lot of good players that have been sent down the road, and it just gives the appearance to the fan base that the club is not trying to win, and there is a big kind of tanking problem in the MLB right now among a lot of the owners, as they appear to be a little bit more worried about the money side of things than they do winning championships. I don't know if it was me personally. Maybe it's hard to be in those shoes, but I feel like I would want to be watching a winner on a regular basis if I was in the position to be an owner of a pro sports franchise. And again, it's just funny the contrast between what the Bengals are doing and what the Reds are doing. The Bengals, I know they have this kind of core group of star players that have come together at the right time. Joe Burrow, guy that a lot of people think is going to win a Super Bowl at some point, and I'm one of those people. I think he's destined to do that, and they're starting to put the pieces around him for that to become more of a realistic possibility. Of course, they just played in that game anyways. So I know the two teams are in different spaces right now, where the Bengals think they're really, really close to winning, and maybe the Reds just didn't get the indication that they were anywhere close to winning a World Series. So why pay all these high-priced players that haven't won a playoff series in the past 15, 20 years, whatever it has been, and start a rebuild with some younger guys? But when does the cycle end? We've seen this time and time again where things don't work out. They get rid of a lot of star players. They try to build with some youth. They start getting good again, or at least into that portion of the standings where they can compete for a playoff spot. And then the cycle starts all over again, where they don't want to pay players. They don't want to pay for free agents, and they start shipping people down the road. So I do think they have a nice core group of young players. Obviously, Jonathan India was the rookie of the year last year. If he wasn't the rookie of the year, Tyler Stevenson might have been. A lot of folks are pumped up to see Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo get a shot to be in the rotation. I personally can't wait to see them get up and be Reds players, and hopefully they live up to their potential because they could be really, really good. They got a top prospect, pitching prospect, that was a first-round pick from the Twins in the Sonny Gray trade. Hopefully he pans out, but it's going to be a few years before we know what type of pitcher he is. And there's some others in there as well. Again, don't have the time to mention all those young players that I want to. And it's really inconsequential right now because it's just unbelievable what's happening with this team. Cincinnati is basically known as a baseball town, but that trend is turning right now. There's already some issues with baseball and getting people to pay attention to the sport and go to the games. And if you're the Reds front office brass and you think what you're doing today is going to get people in that stadium, you might have another thing coming, because I think there's a lot of people, myself alike, that are not very happy with the direction of the club. So we'll see if it all pans out for them in the future. These young kids come up and maybe do something special, but that's a long ways off, and people don't have patience in the world of sports or in general. So So if I had to offer any predictions about the Reds, I don't think they're done offloading players, whether it happens before opening day or if it happens in the middle of the season. This team is not looking like it's going anywhere fast, and I wouldn't be surprised if they are near the bottom of the National League this year. It's just mind-boggling to me what they have done here recently, and I feel really, really bad for Joey Votto. I could probably speak on the whole 30-minute show on why I feel bad for him in this situation that he is in. Hopefully he gets a chance to go play somewhere that can get him in a situation where he can potentially make a run at a World Series. I know he's got the no-trade clause, and he wants to play for one team his whole career, and I admire that. But at this point, I think he deserves better. And if anybody else is traded from this team, I hope it's Joey Votto to a contender because he deserves it. Speaking a little bit more on baseball, we learned a little bit more about rule changes coming into this new season. There will be a universal DH. I have come around to this in recent years. I am kind of sick of seeing pitchers go up there to bat. They rarely get a hit. They rarely are even trying, it seems. Nobody cares about bunting anymore, and quite frankly, nobody can do it well. So let's get another guy up there with a bat that knows what to do with it. Let's see the ball fly over the wall or into the gaps and get these guys running around the bases because baseball needs some excitement. So I'm all for the universal DH. I also think it'll help extend the career of a guy like Joey Votto, who doesn't have to play the field every day. You can rest guys and still get them three or four at bats. So I think this is going to be a huge benefit for National League teams like the Cincinnati Reds. The extra innings rule is going to change. No more is there going to be an automatic base runner starting on second base. I actually started to like it a little bit last year. I think that's because the Reds were actually good in extra inning games. It didn't necessarily have anything to do with a runner starting on second base to start the inning. It was just because the Reds were having great success with it, and it was exciting to watch when your team wins. So even if they're reverting back to the regular extra inning rules, as long as the Reds win those games and they're just as exciting, I'll be just as happy to watch it. And if they go 15, 16 innings, then so be it. You still had that possibility with the runner starting on second anyways, so I don't care that they're switching it back to that. Once you watch a couple games and get used to the old rule, you'll forget that the ghost runner thing was even a thing. And then the doubleheaders, that's going to go back to being 9-inning games instead of 7-inning games, and I'm pretty indifferent on the doubleheader length. Traditionalists will be like, yes, I'm very happy that the 9-inning games are back. I didn't have a problem with the 7-inning games. It basically started because of the COVID season that they played, bled into last year. I'd say the only perk of it was if your team on a particular day had your top starting pitchers going in those two games, you could get through those games without using a ton of your bullpen if your starters had a really nice outing. But the same can be true in a 9-inning game. Well, I had a few other things I wanted to get into, but don't have much time as I am now running over. So I do want to just quickly say FC Cincinnati, first win of the season on Saturday on the road at Orlando, winning 2-1 behind two goals from Brandon Vasquez. Through three games this season under the new leadership head coach, Pat Noonan, this team has already been much improved. They are much more threatening going towards the goal, and I think some better things are going to continue happening for the orange and blue as they'll come home to take on Inter Miami this Saturday, 1 p.m. That is a very winnable game for FC Cincinnati. Also wanted to talk a little bit about the NCAA tournament as the bracket came out yesterday. Since I'm out of time, I'll give you my final four picks, and I made these very, very quickly. I don't even know if I'm going to fill out an entire bracket. I was torn between Gonzaga and Duke in that particular region. I'll go with the Zags because of their recent success in the tournament, making it to the final four. Also on that side of the bracket, I believe UK has a final four team, and then I'm going to go with Illinois and Auburn on the other side. So Gonzaga, Kentucky, Illinois, Auburn, my final four picks. And I would personally like to see Gonzaga win the whole thing because they've been all so close here in recent memory, and I like Mark Few and what he's been able to do with that program and playing in a smaller conference against lesser competition. I think it would make it all that much sweeter if the Zags are able to go out and win the national championship. That's it for me tonight. Ran over a little bit. Appreciate you hanging with me here on Crunch Time. It is presented by OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Don't forget, Dr. Ron Auer is going to join the show later on this month on the 28th. And in the meantime, you can go over to OrthoSensi.com to learn more about their their services. We'll do this again next Monday, 6 to 6:30, right here on Eagle Country 99.3.